Welcome back, all the new you maniacs, to the Spinner Rack here at Season 5 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. And welcome to our 100th episode, Super Spectacular. Woo!
Yeah!
Oh yeah!
To celebrate our 100th episode, we will be doing the exact same thing we always do with no changes. Whatsoever.
We've planned this out for a long time to have something that's absolutely indistinguishable from every other episode. We are your hosts. Still.
Yeah. Still Andy talking about Star Brand, which has only made it up to number 17, which might be a blessing. But also
sometimes it works out in our favor. And I'm Steven. Still, with a night mask backup story. Yes.
Hey, we didn't break up and, like, you know.
We have a tearful reunion. Didn't have to replace
and bring in Shemp or anything to finish off the rest of the episodes.
We should have, like, two competing podcasts. One is, like, the new universe and one is the now universe. Might split the fan base, all, like, three of you. Might make it kind of awkward. I don't know.
Could bring in like a Poochie like bonus character to the podcast. It's just like, you know, man, that Kid Connell's got the Riz kind of stuff, you know, get the kid slang.
Let's get Poochie's take.
Hi, guys. I'm Poochie. That Ken Connell sure something.
Anyway. The new universe was still launched in 1986 as an imprint from Marvel Comics dedicated to a more grounded, less fantastic approach to comics. The original idea was the world outside your window, and it included real-time progress. The new universe has changed a lot in 2 years, and now we are we're just starting 1989.
Just starting.
The world knows about paranormals, and the U.S. government has started capturing and drafting them into the Army and CIA. Pittsburgh has been destroyed, forming the Pit, and creating new, sometimes twisted paranormals. Only a few issues remain for each surviving series, and they all seem to be headed towards war.
War!
With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each remaining comic in the order they hit the spinner rack. Or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. We have some fun stuff over at our website, kickersinc.com, where we're trying to collect some of the official handbook pages that were published on these characters and put up a gallery of recent commissions. So we'll try to get some new stuff up there for you. We also appear on X at Kickers Inc., and you can follow along there to be updated on what the weekly episode is.
Right. And this week's weekly episode is back to our bi-monthly friend, the Star Brand. Where it came from, how it got to Earth, what energies it employs are mysteries. Maybe even John Byrne doesn't know. Whoever wields its power can do virtually anything. The only limitation to its use is the imagination and courage of its wielder, or perhaps writer. this episode's Marvel Age solicit was Star Brand 17. The Star Brand is passed on. The result could mean paradise comes to Earth at last. Written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Tom Palmer. Not giving you a whole lot on that one.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we brought it up too much, but I think that's a little bit more like what the last issue was like, where the Star Child passed on the Star Brand. But the paradise comes to Earth, and then last issue was the there's no death. Just like, actually, you know, not, I've been thinking about it, some more like religious elements than I noticed at first glance, but we will be discussing that and the bonus feature, which is a backup story this week, a Night Mask 6-page extra story.
Right. Still ignoring the brick wall, Suicide Smythe or Dasher Corbin backup stories that they should be writing. Right? How is the New York Smashers doing without their star quarterback, right? What's the season look like? We need to know these things.
You know, the troubleshooters haven't been seen in a long time either.
Exactly, right? The surviving ones.
I mean, at first I was happy to see Night Mask, and then it was like just Night Mask after Night Mask, and it was like, I feel like we're missing out on something here. Anyway. Well,
everybody likes Night Mask, I guess. So yeah, Starbrand 17, cover date January 1989, although it likely came out October 18th, 1988. So we'll jump the gun in writing that headed into 1989 thing, I guess. Our cover, we talked a little bit about in previous issues, you know, you've got someone standing at the edge of the pit, like a little Pittsburgh sign in the background, like smoldering, smoky cover. And you could make him out a little better in the real cover than in the preview, with the nice round glasses and the mustache and suspenders. So that's our friend, Wilfred Brimley. I think technically Jacob Burnley, but I've come to just, it's Wilfred Brimley, the diabetes oatmeal guy. So he's got the star brand. And actually the cover looks pretty cool though. I'll give it that. Like it's nice composition.
It is, and it is not like just an expanded panel from the issue, which we
right, yeah.
got last time.
Cutting them corners, not as much this time. Gotta take advantage of those extra weeks and actually do something. Ugh. Anyway, so crack open the book. John Byrne was listed for credit for writers and breakdowns, so he kind of drew the outline, and Tom Morgan with finishes. So I guess he finished the pencils and inked them. But yeah, so as far as last time goes, like a few things to remember from previous issues that could be helpful is, the witness shows up here, Nelson Kohler. You know, he was the one who was there when the pit exploded, and he's sort of this ghost that just kind of floats around and experiences things. Wilfred Brimley in previous episodes, you know, so here's an old guy, and the star baby gave him the power, thinking like, all right, well, I'm making all these mistakes, let's, maybe this older experienced guy might be able to do something useful. And then, we'll see Mac Browning in this one as well, who's sort of a John Byrne character who's in charge of the pit and killing civilians as it goes. And the opening splash page here is basically, we get the inside title, The Big Fix, and it's a bunch of guys standing around a table where they've put together all of these photographs of aerial photographs of the pit. So it's like 1988. We don't have we can't put it up on a big screen. You know, it's a bunch of photos all overlaid on top of each other to kind of show what it's looking like. It's basically, you know, it's kind of hard to see what's going on, but we can see an edge of the pit and all these spheres, like white spheres that have just kind of shown up. And we get Mac Browning saying, all right, Mueller, what the heck am I looking at here? And he said, you know, your guess is as good as mine, Colonel Browning. The mosaic is made up of about 100 pictures of the area bordering the southeast perimeter of the pit. So, you know, they argue about, like, well, what is this? What are these smooth circular things? And like, I've never seen them before. Well, neither have we. You know, that's why I brought you over here. There's four hemispheres just kind of like floating along the surface of the pit or on the edge. And, you know, he says, where's the interesting bit? He says there's a high energy reading in each of those hemispheres, and as near as we can tell, the same energy that was released when the pit was created. And then we get a what?
What?
I love this just because, like, I mean, this is just like Star Trek vocabulary, right? Like, okay, some interesting energy readings. Like, what is an energy reading? Like,
what are you pointing at to get that reading? What are you reading it off of?
Is it just light?
Is there some sort of units coming out on the bottom of the screen? I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah I reading back, I I don't know if these are meant to be satellite photos or like high altitude. Maybe it's just like that, like high altitude airplane
Yeah, I think
reconnaissance
that's kind
thing.
of what they said. They did a flyby 2 days ago, that
Oh,
kind of thing.
right. So yeah, it's a little, 80s tech with the sci-fi twist in it. I don't know.
Yeah, I just
Okay.
thought it was funny. Like, comic books and sci-fi stuff always uses energy readings, and it's just like never in a way that makes sense. Like, this has very unique energy readings. Like, what does that mean? Like, particular wavelength of gamma radiation? Like, what are we talking about here?
If we were physicists, we'd probably have that same expression when people say we need more molecules or something. It's like,
Right. The quantum photons are overloading the capacitors. Anyway, so immediately Browning needs to go drive out there because you send your highest ranking person, on the mission, with only one dude, to check things out. And that's just that's how Browning rolls. Maybe there's some civilians out there causing some trouble, and he wants to be there to intercept them.
I was just disappointed it wasn't Mueller still coming along. I don't for the ride. I don't know.
No.
Sorry.
Corporal Jorgensen, however, is going on for the ride. So they get in these like big
Jumping Yimini, you saw a big energy spike out there. Yeah.
I
What am I even doing with that?
don't know. It's funny.
Good.
Anyway. I mean, even the other guy with him is like, I can't see how this is a terrifically good idea.
Yeah, they look like they're in a snowstorm, and then he says, "May I remind the colonel that ain't snow falling out there. Sorry, it's volcanic ash. And if that big firecracker building in the pit should decide to blow, and
Yeah, both our widows will receive nice soft pensions for the rest of their lives. Shut up and keep driving.
yeah, the so it looks like a snowstorm, except it's volcanic ash. Except this is." I don't know how it relates to that DP7 we had recently, where they were actually in what they called the trench around the
Yeah.
pit. So yeah, this isn't dated, so the timeline's a little, who knows? But yeah, this is like crazy. I don't know, nuclear winter looking, whatever.
Yeah, and the thing they're driving up to just looks like a white sphere or a wall almost. Like it looks like, the pit black event, like explosion essentially. Except it's just sort of like a solid thing, sitting there. So yeah, they pull up to it on their big tracked vehicle again. It's sort of massive, and Mac Browning gets out. And basically, like, attaches a tether to himself because he's just going to walk up to it. He says, "I'm going to tether myself to the M548A1 with this unbreakable nylon line." It's like, okay. But yeah,
I look,
that's the name of the truck, I guess.
yeah, I looked it up, but it's still in production, it seems like.
Yeah, top speed 38 miles per hour.
It's truly an all-terrain vehicle. It's tracked, I think, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's got like treads. If you got 40,000, you could buy yourself one, like a used one.
Ooh,
I'm
now we're talking.
not sure that that would be legal to drive in New York, but maybe Michigan. You can drive anything, I think. Anyway,
Tempting.
so then we got a couple panels of the guy sitting in the truck, with Mac Browning kind of reporting back. I want a full record of this for the science boys. Going's not too bad so far. So he's kind of walking in. He's 6 yards inside the turbulence boundary. So it hasn't quite hit the edge of the energy thing yet. Again, kind of more talk about readings, energy, and that kind of stuff. And he's like, says, "It's getting hard to go forward. Feels like I'm pushing into a rubber wall. I'm gonna move parallel," and then you get like, "Oh, what the heck?" And then it kind of cuts out. From there, we cut to, exasperated me, the witness, Nelson Kohler, the most exciting character ever. And he's reminding us of his backstory as he's kind of flying through. So he's basically like talking about, how he died during the white event. So then like his ghost sort of became him, and that's sort of his power. And something has sort of drawn him back to the pit. You know, he'd been wandering around for a while as well. And again, yada yada yada. He goes through kind of the storm and then kind of breaks through it and sees daylight. So he's kind of comes through all of this purple stormy mess and sees a nice little neighborhood with blue skies. And he's like, my eyes, my wonder at what we see below. We cut from there. I mostly kind of skip the witness dialogue because I find him pretty boring, but
The clouds aren't the only thing that's purple. The prose is pretty purple too. You know what I mean? Yowza! Bing. Anyway.
They stir as I approach what I sense to be the bloated belly of the storm, high above tortured earth.
It's hard to read when your eyes are kind of rolling back in your head every couple of lines, so let's move on.
We're following along characters, but it's also kind of so Mac Browning walks in, as the witness is flying in, sees this restored area around Pittsburgh, and then we cut to Wilford Brimley and his little grandson, and they're kind of walking along the streets, and everything's kind of repaired. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing, Granddad. The trees, the birds, the squirrels. And he's like, yeah, well, the big test is up ahead. So far, I've only been trying to figure out just how much this here Star Brand power can do. Making the trees come back and calling the birds has been easy.
What?
Okay, so yeah, I don't know. Well, the Star Brand is weird now. Like, it can do anything.
Only limited by the imagination of the wielder.
Right.
Yes. But
So he's talking about,
yes.
so he's sort of rebuilding these pods and bringing things back, but on the edge. So he's like, all right, so the real test is, can I try this in the pit, right? Can I bring back Pittsburgh where everything is destroyed rather than like on the edge where everything just kind of got crunched? So he flies off. Again, just seeing this guy fly around is kind of funny. But he flies off and leaves Billy. He's
He
like,
is the
cool.
pudgiest guy with power of flight I've ever seen.
Right. You'll be okay, Grandpa. Just go fix Pittsburgh.
Yeah, the let me point. I forgot to point out when Browning was driving in, he passed a sign that says Washington 3 miles or something. So that's the sort of southwest corner of the state. I guess
Gotcha.
just past the pit zone. So that's where those spheres are, apparently.
Gotcha. I'll be counting on your Pittsburghiness for later in the issue.
Oh yeah, there's some stuff a coming, yeah.
The witness sees Wilford Brimley fly by, and then starts recapping again. So he's like the annoying narrator now, and kind of recapping where he came across Ken, because he was right there when Ken actually, caused the explosion that destroyed Pittsburgh. And he's like, to this day, I do not know what he intended to do by his strange actions, but I know what he did in a single searing second. Alliteration. The Steel City was obliterated.
So you'll remember that he recognizes that the power, the Star Brand power, is there in Ken, and it's now in Jacob Burnley, and so that he's flying up to Ken just as he does this, but he can't, as he say, communicate with him. He cannot communicate with the Star Brand wielder. Anyway, Steel City, yes, there we go.
And then he kind of recaps. So in the Pit comic, he flies down into the destruction and finds the city still there and like all the people still kind of standing there. And so he had some weird vision of the spirits of all of the Pittsburghians.
Burger sounds good.
Pittsburghers, Yinzers. And then like they all kind of like blame him and attack him, and kind of it was a weird scene. So he kind of recaps that again, and then they disappear. Just all that remained were the strange new voices in my mind and a crater. So like as he kind of describes things, like he says a bunch of new information, which is maybe kind of helps clue us into what he can do now. Like voices speaking through him, stuff like that, or like spiritual passengers, and he can sense paranormals, kind of stuff. But that comes into play a little bit later. Anyway, we get to the cover part. Wilford Brimley standing on the edge of the pit. He's like, "Well, this is it. Well, Jake, this is it. I mean, sorry. Well, Wilford, this is it. This is the big job you've set yourself up for. Let's see if you can get it done." And I remember I was dreaming that he was going to fill it with oatmeal. I think that would have been more fun. So he kind of raises his arms, and some weird energy beams come out, and like crackling red lightning bolts and all sorts of power. We cut to the witness again. Oh, why does this guy keep showing up? I'm tired of him. And he's like, "Something strange is happening, and like something alive, something seeking separation." And so we get a panel of him with all these like ghost figures like jutting out of him at all angles, which it took me a while to figure it out, but it's like the spirits of the Pittsburgh people being pulled out of him by the Star Brand Wilford Brimley power. Sure.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, or like they didn't have a home and maybe they now do or something.
I guess. Yeah.
The energy, I mean, these are big splash pages. Like a lot of them have, only a couple panels basically. It's all pretty dramatic when Jacob powers up and everything. I mean, it's nice looking stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, you, I don't know.
Also good if you're just trying to get it over with and you don't want to have to draw too much.
That's also a good thing. Yeah, he I mean the trouble with the witness's narration is it's a bunch of, metaphysical mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. As
And
if the essence of my being has been scraped away. Before me,
I
the sky is full of coruscating energies. They dance, they swirl.
And you're just left like, okay, you said a bunch of stuff, but okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. Light grows brighter, wilder.
Yeah. So it looks like he's kind of caught in a storm and there's like a tornado of energy. And so, like, the best I can really kind of decode is like, the Star Brand Brimley's trying to reform Pittsburgh and he sort of pulls out some of this energy or the spirits of the people of Pittsburgh from the witness. And then it's all kind of coming together in this swirling mass of energy. And then we turn the page and we get this big double page splash of Pittsburgh returned. Pittsburgh is
Pittsburgh.
reborn.
This is real nice. It is the view from Point Park. You get the there's a fountain right there at the point, and a little park of there's a Fort Pitt Museum, and then a view of the skyscrapers of downtown Pittsburgh. That's actually pretty accurate,
Nice.
particularly for that time, because I know they've some of it's new, but. So they're going so left to right, you've got the bridges that go over to the North Shore. That's like where the stadiums are. And then some of these random buildings. So the like I think this on the left, one of the tallest skyscrapers with sort of a pyramid on top is called the Gulf Tower. And those are like different colors in the
Okay.
pyramid. Like telling you whether it's the temperature or whether it's going to rain or something. I don't, no one knows the code except, you can look it up, but I can't imagine anyone really. The tallest building in the middle is was the US Steel Tower. Now it has a big UPMC sign on it. I think the sort of one, the next tallest one to, just to its right, looks kind of like a hat is, BNY Mellon building, maybe? And then the one just below that with the sort of castle thing, four things sticking up on it is the PPG place.
Okay.
Below that, I think one of the low buildings there is the Post Gazette building. the local newspaper. And yeah, it has this, it's this nice park, but like it has a big major highway driving right through the middle of it and everything. So,
Sounds about
over
right.
on the right, you can see, it must have been one of the stadiums. They've rebuilt those a couple times since then, so I'm not quite sure what those are supposed to be. The only thing that was a little actually off is in the back, you see all these sort of on like a horizon with a bunch of more buildings. That's actually just a hillside, really.
Okay, so they went a little overboard.
Yeah, the whatever, the hills and valleys here kind of block your view off from the neighborhood over. So anyway.
How does Wilford Brimley put Pittsburgh back together anyway? Like, does he remember all that stuff? Does he need to? Like,
I wonder if it's just a matter of, well, let me say. The way he seems to be doing it, where he's just sort of drawing energy into it, I'm not quite sure. Yeah. If it, we'll see in a second, like the memories of Pittsburgh are maybe from those ghosts or something. I don't know.
yeah, I think that's the best guess. But yeah, so the witness flies down into the newly reborn Pittsburgh. And he's looking around. He's like, and yeah, and I understand why the memories of all the slaughtered thousands have reposed within me for these many months. They've become my memories, and even though their sources have departed, I remember Pittsburgh. But now I drift towards the suburbs. If I had a heart, surely it would grow cold. So he sees something that, yeah, kind of
By
makes
the
him take a step back.
so yeah, he as he's flying around, he passes Three Rivers Stadium there, which I'll be honest wasn't a big loss. And I wonder, there's like a more just house that he passes. I can't help but wonder if that's like a something I should recognize, but.
Yeah, it's kind of got a sign on it, but I can't really make it out.
But yeah, Burnley, I mean the spirits are were with the witness, and the witness wasn't communicating with Burnley. So how does Burnley know to sort of fill it up like that? That's a good question. That's a
Yeah.
very good question. Because if you were asking me to like recreate Pittsburgh, I mean there's like a few streets that I'd get pretty close, but
Right. I mean, really, like,
would look pretty sketchy, a lot of it.
if you filled in the pit and stopped the volcanic mess, like that
That
might have
would be
been a good
nice.
start.
Yeah, if you just had a like a like this is what the area was like 100 years ago, a couple hundred years ago. Yeah.
But I guess he
Yeah.
wouldn't know about the juice, so it might be like Love Canal or something in New York. Like, sure, we've filled in the pit, but all the toxic waste is bubbling underneath.
Be better than what they have now, so yeah.
Anyway, Brimley's sort of standing there happy until Mac Browning in his green suit or his orange suit runs into him. He's like, "Hey, you!" He's like, "What are you?" Brimley's like, "Who are you? What are you doing down here?" He's like, "I'm Colonel McIntyre Browning, and I think those questions are mine, friend. Are you a civilian?"
I don't see any uniforms on you there, buddy.
Actually, Brimley says he's Sergeant Quartermaster Corps retired. And he's like, "As this and as to what I was doing here, I just fixed Pittsburgh." They're like, "Oh, dang, okay."
Nice. Yeah.
Witness buzz kills him immediately. "Is no, Mr. Burnley, you have not. I call myself the witness, as I hoped your
We
power."
call you the C blocker because
Says, "As I hope your power enables you to see my spirit form."
what? Come on. It literally was 3 5 pages ago when Ken could not, with the same power, could not see you or talk to you.
Mac Browning can't see him, so they have a little side conversation, and the witness is like, "Follow me," and they kind of fly up to Pittsburgh, and he shows him, you can look at the city and it looks perfect, and but then if you look at the edge of the city, And there's a nice panel of like one of the bridges on the water and sort of the edge of the city. And on the left side of the picture, like everything's kind of fuzzy. It's like like a watercolor painting that got runny or unfinished kind of thing. He's like, "What?" It's like, "It's not there at all. It's just floating. It's like floating like a dream, Jacob, like my own lost dream of life." I'm like, "Geez, this guy was a computer salesman. Like, why is he such a poet?"
Suddenly he's the Sandman. Yeah, whatever.
He's like, the explosion of the white event, this is the witness, the explosion of the white event created me. Jake Burnley's power is the embodiment of the white event, or like a memory. I watched the old man drift away in silence. His face has told me what his words cannot, that he understands. It is not Pittsburgh which floats upon the clouds below us. It is the memory of Pittsburgh, created from the thoughts and hopes and dreams of all who died here. Those same thoughts, hopes, and dreams which dwelt within me and which Jake Burnley's power called forth. I'm like, oh, okay, enough, man. And okay, so it's not real. It's a spiritual imagination memory. It's all destroyed. It can never come back. Those people
The
can't come
same
back.
power wielded by another annihilated Pittsburgh. That annihilation was complete, absolute, even though we told you the power could do anything.
Right.
And only my, I absorbed the superficial conscious minds of those who lived here. Their souls are long since gone, their dreams long since denied. Like the memory, it is the floating phantom city will soon fade away. And let me point the bottom of the page before that. You had, it wasn't just the empty city. There were just like the spirits that I guess had
Smiling,
gone
happy
back there.
people in
Yeah, just the like nice normal people in Pittsburgh.
it. Yeah.
But
Then we get a last panel in a meanwhile. And it looks to be a ruined building with a kind of mutated, blobby looking character, which looks an awful lot like what happens when either the old man or Ken was killed and then reborn by the Starbrand power. They look like horrible and mutated, and that's kind of what freaked him out in the first place. They say, oh no, not again, to be continued. So this is pretty clearly Ken Connell back in the church. So in the episode where like no one could die, he was back alive again and like ranting about the new universe and how Jim Shooter has to control the world kind of around him kind of thing.
projection is a common psychological malady.
Yeah, so I guess we're bringing him back again one more time. More Ken Connell. And that's it. That's it for Starbrand 17.
To be
It was
continued.
one of the comics of all time.
This is taking us a lot less time to talk about than usual. It's almost as if there wasn't really very much here. And it was extremely thin, despite the page count, like you said. I mean, there was a famously Walt Simonson had done a Thor where it was just all splash pages. It was a real like, high point in his Thor run.
Yeah.
It's a really awesome book, but obviously you can't do that every month. But
Right. Then you're just phoning
you're just phoning it. This feels very open in some ways, and as you say, so it reads pretty fast, even with all this florid witness.
it in. Yeah.
There's a word for just running off at the mouth and endlessly, and forget it.
I mean, in the direction that the book is going, like the story kind of makes sense. Okay, so average old man gets the power. What's he gonna do? Like, all right, maybe try and fix the biggest problem in the last year or so. Maybe I can fix the pit, right? So this is it's sort of a logical piece, but like Mac Browning doesn't really do anything. Like, there's not really any particular reason for him to be there. The witness. I mean, he does play a role in what happens. Like, it's sort of his, without him, like, then the energy of the people and the memory of Pittsburgh wouldn't have formed. So, like, what, and maybe he screwed it up. Like, maybe if he weren't there, then Wilford Brimley could have fixed the pit or something. I don't know, maybe not brought the people back, but at least, fixed the problem. But yeah, it's just like so much witness. It's just not an interesting character because he can't interact with the world mostly, and thus he's left being this annoying narrator. So it's like a bunch of recap.
Yeah, his things he witnesses aren't that great, I'll be honest. So I think I had a vague memory of this issue. I think as we get closer, I kind of like must have been last time like read from back to front because these last couple of things are getting a little more the old memory jogging. But I or maybe I just remember a sense of frustration. The whole thrust of the story seems to be that do not try to overwrite what I wrote. You
That's
can play fast and
interesting.
loose with continuity all you want, but the stuff I wrote, that's in there for good. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
I will twist Ken and his girlfriend into all kind of pretzels trying to make their motivations work, but when I blew things up, even though I said you have infinite power, you do not have infinite power to correct anything I did. I'm John Byrne. Goodbye. Thank you.
I would
I
say
mean,
the
that's.
one little positive piece from this is when the witness was ex kind of explaining what he can do and how, like, the voices of the people who died in Pittsburgh can speak through him. Like, maybe that officially explains Ghost Myron, you know?
That is, yeah, that's a good point. I noted jotted that down somewhere. Yeah, the Ghost Myron was probably some residue of Myron's whatever. He kind of distinguishes like their souls and their last bits of consciousness, which is interesting. But the yeah the, that somehow, yeah. So then he's talking to Ken through that.
Yeah, it would have
Well,
been
he
more.
does say that like he can now talk to Burnley. So, okay, after the pit, somehow he has the power to talk to the Starbrand wielders, maybe.
Yeah, it would have been way better if they were just more explicit about that, though. Like, if we knew, because like the witness was one of the people's like, I gotta find out who did this, and like, teach him a lesson or something, and then he just disappears forever and doesn't really do anything interesting. But like, if we kind of knew he was behind the scenes, like making these like ghost people to kind of, interrupt and sort of change the course of events, kind of thing. Because really, he kind of kills Ken the first time, I guess, or like the first time since the
When he's
pit.
riding his motorcycle,
Yeah, yeah. Because like it's stupid if it's just like some vision of Myron that Ken is seeing as his like guilty conscience, and I still don't like the whole setup or idea of it. I don't like that part of the story, but it's at least a little more interesting if it's like the witness screwing with him,
Yeah, that does. I'd forgotten about that part of it. I remembered Myron coming back, but the part where he tries to kill Ken was hilarious. And
It
that
was
does.
so like thrown in at the end of the comic too, and it's like, oh yeah, and here's Ken on a motorcycle and he dies. Okay.
Yeah, that makes a good point. Maybe this does sort of these points do connect a little bit better when you look at it that way. Witness screwing around with Ken. Okay. I
Yeah.
mean, the whole thing, there was, Justice, Browning, several people wanted to find out who caused the pit. And, even when they know, they don't seem to do anything about it. So at least
Yeah.
that was like an attempt. I don't know.
I guess I might suspect too that like Starbrand is bi-monthly. It's kind of like way out of it's weird in a weird space and time, right? So it's not it doesn't easily match up with other books in terms of like the real-time progression. So I wonder if that takes Ken out of everything else. Like you can't use him in a Justice issue because, all right, well, Byrne's not done doing whatever with him, turning him into proto-pudding or an angry, crazy guy, you know? It's like, so that maybe that kind of just removes that story element so nobody else can use it, you know?
Could be. Possibly, I think Byrne had sort of signed up for a year or something and was so you can imagine that at some point he'd be like, okay, I got better things to do. And if the new universe was still kind of limping along, yeah, someone else could have picked it up and gone from there. Maybe, yeah,
Not
okay.
like there isn't a long history, but yeah, I was just thinking like, like he can't show up in Justice and have Justice track him down because we don't, because he's in the middle of some weird storyline, you know?
Yeah, it always feels like they've forgotten that, but you could have always brought it back, issue, third year issues of like, oh, now the hunt for Ken Connell, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be cool if like the end of the new universe was like a showdown of like all the big power players kind of thing, like Psy-Hawk and Rostvow and Justice and Starbrand and like,
Oh, yeah, that.
right? Like that would have been cool.
Everyone runs towards each other. I
Yeah.
don't know why they do that.
It's the
Yeah.
only way we know how to fight people.
Yeah. It's a I don't know. There's a lot going on in the other books. This one has come appears so infrequently and then so little happens in it that I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's still like my original complaint is like it doesn't have a main character, right?
Oh, it's even like hard to believe, but without Roger and Jane, it's even worse. Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think this might be a little better.
It's certainly not any more full. I mean, the only
Don't
person
want to
talking
look
is.
awesome and have muscles and be tall.
I mean, when your choice is Roger or the Witness, I don't know. At least Roger's good for a laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This is too much witness.
So yeah, yeah, you get this, I guess in comics a lot of, this sort of pseudoscience and then pseudo metaphysics or something, because you create these problems that are comic book problems, and so you have, comic book solutions to those problems. Oh, his spirits of the deceased had all resided in me, and so then if I wasn't present when you tried to recreate Pittsburgh, it's going to fail. Or, I don't know,
Yeah, it just doesn't. It's still like since Byrne took over, this is like the least new universe-y comic too. It's like the least grounded because it's all feels weird and magical,
The, I mean, I think you brought a good point. What if you just paved it over and made it so it's at least not like a gaping, volcano in the heart of America, you
Right.
really start limiting your story possibilities to post-apocalyptic at that point, with the way this has kind of been portrayed. And to be like, well, nope, no way you can fix this. Sorry.
Yeah. It would have been kind of cool if they paved it over and then like again like the idea of the poisonous pit juice seeping up, like the first people who try to build there, like some weird stuff starts happening,
I think that'd be great, like the Hellmouth and Buffy or something. You've
Right,
got like,
exactly,
yeah,
yeah.
and then you like, no one trusts it, so maybe they tell the paranormals, you can go there if you want to, live or something, and becomes a paranormal town. I don't know.
The
You
CIA
get
sends a bunch of ladies there to fight for
the
some mysterious things they have no chance against.
if there's more showers and howling offs to be had. The like I said, it was a real nice shot of Pittsburgh. I don't know if that's a trace, but I appreciate the effort,
Yeah.
at least in that.
I enjoyed that part and the truck.
It's a nice truck too. Yeah, good reference there.
Good old M54 8A1.
I mean, we it's it it yeah. This is star brand in a for a year now, more than a year now. You know, just picking at like the origin of star brand, and if you can't do that, pick at the pit disaster or something, and just keep kind of never resolve and move forward, and keep kind of telling yourself this didn't make sense, that didn't make sense. I don't know.
If the end of the new universe ends with like the last couple pages of like the witness talking, I'm throwing out all my books. What was it all for? Go away, witness.
I wish I could guarantee that's not gonna happen. Don't do that.
I'm probably not gonna actually do that. I'll throw away something. My hopes and dreams.
Let me see. This, like I said, it's a vague memory. I wanted to like rebut it in some ways, but I don't know. It's again reminiscent of this novel I read last year, Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Tom Sweaterlish, as Pittsburgh is destroyed by a nuke and sort of only exists as this sort of a virtual sort of online presence you can visit. And so people are always kind of losing themselves in these memories of it. This doesn't do much with that whole like there was a pit life form a couple of issues back.
Yeah, that's dead, I guess, though. So
yeah, and that was, I don't know, not know where you can go with that.
At least they got rid of the Star Boy because he was sad because he killed the pit thing.
He's what went to space, I guess,
right, to figure out the origins of the power or something like that.
Okay. Did you ever read Green Lantern with that Coast City storyline?
That was like the Superman villain kind of did that, like the Eradicator,
I think that's
or
right.
Something.
I only read descriptions of it, so
I only read the I read the Superman part, and then like the one issue of Green Lantern, because it was like you needed to read that one to get the whole story kind of thing. I didn't read the Green Lantern parts.
Yeah, it seems a little similar where these villains destroy a whole city, and then Jordan tries to bring it back with his power, but it's like, no, you can't do that for some reason. I don't know.
I mean, it would just all be all like green glowing buildings and stuff, right?
Some people like that. I don't know. I don't know. If you know, sometimes you're just trying to counter some like future revisionist or something, it feels like. Like, no, don't undo my great story. It's the best. I don't know. I have not much more to tell you about it.
Nukin or the pits?
I would give this the pits.
Yeah, I mean, it even deals with the pit, so that's perfect. I would say I'm the pits easy. It's not one of the worst comics ever. I picked up a few Aquaman issues from one of the various reboots from like an unknown writer, and it was like one of the most unreadable things ever. And this is much better than that Aquaman series. Okay. Before Peter David takes over and makes it readable, apparently. But I'm slightly interested in where Ken Connell comes back, though I know he's just going to be written as like some crazy madman or something. So I don't think I ever read past here. So 18 and 19 will be totally uncharted territory. I think I know where it's going, but I'm mildly curious. So that's the best I can say.
Burnley,
I hope he just goes away.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a little like naive for an old man. Like, hey, Colonel, who has people shot all the time. Let me just give you my real name and address, I guess. And yeah, I have a the greatest power of all. Yeah, it's what would that be? C minus.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know.
In our rating system, yeah.
The art of it was reasonable this time. Oh, let us jump on into Night Mask in a backup story. The backup story is also crazy.
It's super crazy and confusing.
I had no memory of this at all by comparison, which is kind of weird. Oh, and I had no memory that the Witness appeared in Starbrand at any point. So he's so forgettable that even if you kind of remember Wilford Brimley trying to resurrect Pittsburgh, you're not going to remember who's talking to him.
This anyway. Issue does show up in the collected issue of Night Mask.
Let me, on a personal note, I found this this issue had a price tag from the downtown comic shop, so it must have been one of the issues I actually had to pay real money to get.
Dang, you didn't just shoplift it?
Imagine my disappointment. Oh, so anyway, like I said, backup story, Night Mask in Teddy Bear. There's a just a splash page to start the story off with, and it is Night Mask in a dream, the crazy version that we've seen recently. And he seems to be sort of mangling a wheelchair over his head and yelling, "Teddy Bear! Get it, Teddy, that's you! Bear, your soul, naked in my dream probes." Keith! And on the floor, it's our friend Teddy. Please give me back my chair. I can't get around without it. Yeah, we have finally a sighting of Teddy Remsen, who we haven't seen since the end of the series.
And Night Mask is getting ready to get himself canceled like that Mr. Beast guy or Dr. Disrespect by perving on his own sister.
I was trying to remember. Do you think she's like 17 at this point? I can't quite remember.
She was
16
to start, I think. So
she could be 18 already, but
it's still his younger sister.
Sister, yeah. You remember when Seinfeld was dating a 17-year-old?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I bring up apropos of nothing, but anyway, this is credited to Fabian Nicieza, writer, and Ron Lim, penciler. Hey,
not just penciler, portentous penciler.
They make little jokes in the credits. I don't know the inker, Mark McKenna, but Mark Seary, the colorist, has been involved before. And I'm going to say he's not that practiced at coloring because we get a big mess in one of these pages. Anyway, Teddy.
Honestly, the editor is going to get the most fire. So,
okay, let's get to it. So, yeah, for some reason, Night Mask is yelling at Teddy in a dream, and she is saying because of the airport explosion, and she's still crawling on the ground, and she sees their parents at the airport where they were killed in an explosion. She's yelling at them, "Mom, Dad, that's not your luggage. Don't touch that bag. There's a bomb." It blows up, of course. And she's still crawling on the ground, and she sees Keith, who is now kind of disembodied from Night Mask, who's floating behind him. But Keith is also look crazy. "Keith, you're okay?" "Sure am, oh small wonder. Say, would you happen to know where my luggage went? Keith Remsen, bombs are us. Redeemable by parents only." He's got his claim ticket, I guess.
It does kind of make me remember fondly Night Mask number one, where we learned his parents were assassinated because they had particularly angry dream science competitors.
It is a very competitive field, you understand. The next page is where the coloring mistake comes in, as Teddy is suddenly about the cover of Miriam Morse in Justice.
Kind of purple, yeah.
It's a odd shade, but I think it's just this page, and it's just a whoops. She's like, "Oh, you couldn't, you didn't. You're just jealous because I'm not a hopeless baby like you." No. And we have Teddy is in a hospital bed, and Keith is on the floor in his dress uniform, actually. And he is like holding his head, like, oh, my head. And we get finally, an appearance by Lita Mercado.
Standing there in a pantsuit.
Doesn't have a lot to say, I'm afraid, but nevertheless.
Maybe that's the special bonus of our 100th episode.
That's right.
Finally something.
Things are looking up finally. Lucian Ballard and Lita are with Keith and asking if he's all right. And he is coming out of his dream journey saying, "It's happened again. She's blaming me for everything, for blaming me for our parents' death. She's blaming me for the fact she was paralyzed." Lita, Lucian, I think it's spelled differently this time. "I have to go back in. I have to help her." "You'll do no such thing, young man. Your sister has been in a coma for months now, and we're doing all we can for her here at Bethesda." You all remember that Psi-Force 24, Lucian was in the hospital where Kathy and Stassi had been prisoners.
Yeah,
And
with the spinning knife guy.
yeah. Lucian continues berating Keith. "Every time you try and come here and try to dive into her subconscious dream state, you push her further away from us. You have no idea how far gone she is already, Ballad. You have no idea what we went through together. I'm not responsible for the terrorist explosion that killed our parents, but it is my fault that she's in a coma."
Possibly my fault that she's purple.
We'd been wondering what happened to Teddy. I thought Keith just got drafted and sort of left her behind. But he goes into some memories of what's been going on. So he remembers, no, he's going into her dream now. He's like, "It's stable. I'm in control again. And the skyline, this is Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh's a baby volcano now. What's going on?" Okay.
It is
They were never in
confusing.
Pittsburgh. Now he's in a, yeah, he's outside a window looking inside, and he sees himself and Teddy and a patient. He says, "This is the window to our old psychiatric clinic in Georgetown. What's it doing in Pittsburgh?" "That's Teddy when she was okay, acting as my reality anchor as I dream probed a patient." "Oh God, that's Hillary James. I can't go through it again. Check out." We get a little asterisk and says, "Check out Psi-Force number 16. I have no idea what that reference is. I
Yeah, we
we
couldn't
talked
even
about it.
figure out like how the mistake might have worked, like if it was a different issue of Psi-Force or a different comic number 16, like nothing made sense.
Yeah, we looked around a bit. The last Night Mask solo, short story was in Starbrand number 16, but it's kind of unrelated. This character Hillary James wasn't seen in any of these other issues, to our
No.
knowledge, and there was no sort of this scene hasn't appeared in any other issues, so.
Yeah. I think the weird part, which makes it confusing, is like he's going into Teddy's dream again, but it's really like a flashback of a previous time where he was trying to help this woman kind of thing. Like just like reading through this backup story is so hard to figure this kind of thing out. Like, because it
Yeah,
really
you're
probably
right.
should have just been a flashback instead of been a dream piece.
It's an inception piece because, yeah, he's dreaming of this previous dream where everything went wrong. Okay,
And
yeah.
maybe the editor just wanted us to read that issue of Psi-Force. So like, oh, check this one out. This is a better story.
It's got Roger fighting a cyborg on the cover. Keith
That's
says, "I can't."
Starbrand.
Oh, right. Psi-Force
Psi-Force, that was the one
16.
where they get the foundation or whatever tries to help him,
That's right, yeah.
and he brain destroys John Lithgow.
I thought, yeah, okay, it's Fabian writing it, so maybe that it is. No, I could not figure it
No.
out.
Anyway.
Hillary James was not one of the scientists at Foundations.
Nope.
I think we've spent enough time on this, but okay.
Let's give it
Keith.
another 10 minutes and then move on.
Yeah. Keith says, I don't know, his night mask is acting crazy again. And he's like inside this woman, Hillary James's dream. And apparently she's like doing celebrity interviews. So she's some minor reporter or something. I was like, I don't know. There's
Like a
she's
Dr. Phil character, like pop psychiatry or something, maybe.
okay, yeah, that works. And she is saying that, you see, I'm something of an empath. I'm a paranormal of sorts. I can feel the pain of others, but only in massive quantities. Oh, really? Well, and we see ahead of her on the road a school bus full of kids just going off the cliff. And she, in driving, starts just screaming and blacking out.
Was
Night
this what
Mask.
happened to her, or is this trying to
So I
work
think there
through
were
it in a
two.
dream?
Think this is two. I mean, they're in their normal clinic, but so it looked like, yeah, this woman has is an empath. She is overloaded from these kids that are killed and is sent to the Ballad Clinic for treatment because she's like in a coma. But then, as we'll see in a second, Teddy and Keith are in her head when the pit happens, which is a million times worse. And so that just kills her and maybe fries them too.
Gotcha.
So that's how the babe got into a coma. Then they send her to me, see if I can get into her brain and straighten it out a bit. Sure, I says, because I'm a goody two shoes. So I'm in this chick's head playing around with Teddy anchoring me, and it figures I'm in the head of an empath who only feels mass pain. That's when Pittsburgh decides to go poof. Again, another white panel. So this James babe, she's history. We're talking put her brains through a Cuisinart and say bye-bye. She's deader than the Bee Gees' career.
Ouch.
Ouch. And as for me and Teddy, well, Keith wakes up inside the Georgetown dream, saying,
No.
Teddy, you have to snap out of it. So he's dressed in it. I know it hurt you. It hurt me too. And she says, Keith, I'm scared. I am too, but you have to help me. Without you to anchor me, I'm out of control, you gutless little wimp. You're scaring me. Every time you try to help, you scare me more. You're so mean. You like being mean? No, but I'd like to eat your eyeballs out. What? Teddy, it's up to you to help me. We all have these horrors inside us, these pains, these angers. I need you to keep mine inside. Will you come back with me? Help me to be whole again. And you'll help me try too? And then we're outside of that dream into the hospital room where she's been. Yes, says Keith. Together, hun, we'll do it together.
Oh. So let me get this straight, right? So the woman, does she feel when someone is caused pain, she feels that pain, but way more, or she only feels the pain of others when it's a massive amount of?
I thought the second one.
Okay, that makes sense, I guess. So then he's trying. So she
Like
gets
she, it's a
wiped
very,
out.
it's a very low power. Like
Yeah.
you need to really kill a lot of people to for her to feel it. But they
Right.
killed so many in the pit and even in this bus accident. Like
Yeah.
I'm sure
So,
I've never been around, 50 people dying all at once. So.
least not that didn't have it coming.
Yes.
So her brain gets fried while Keith is inside with Teddy helping. And then that puts Teddy in a coma, and then that creates Crazy Night Mask because he can't kind of control like all the weirdness, you know, the pains, the horrors, the nightmares, that kind of stuff anymore.
I guess.
So then, like, he's trying to dive into Teddy's dream to help her, but every time he does, he gets crazy night mask, which just makes everything worse each time until finally, like, here, like these last couple panels. I'm finally putting this together. It wasn't really easy. It's like split between Keith talking and then crazy night mask talking kind of thing. Like, it would have been a good like movie scene where he's like talking normal and then he's like, oh, blah, 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 you know, and goes crazy kind of stuff. But it's hard to make that. Like, they should have used different lettering or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, you can do a lot of stuff with the style of lettering to the balloons or the. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
So
it's a
hopefully
little
he's
harder to
asking
follow than it needs
Teddy.
to be.
So he's saying, without you, I can't keep these horrors buried inside. They come out rather than he's asking her to take it from him, take my burdens.
I want you to take all these nightmares and keep them to yourself. All right, I'm free. Yeah.
It took a lot
Well.
of work to figure this one out.
Yeah, it's a I mean, a little more effort than it should have, but it's okay. And I honestly, yeah, we would like to see some of the other characters that are floating around and haven't been seen in a while.
Yeah, more
We're getting
Teddy is
plenty of
good.
Night Mask.
More Lita, less Lucian would have been good.
Narc Mask.
Narc mask. Yeah, I still Night Mask with his buzz cut and military uniform bothers me, but what are you gonna do?
Yeah, that's where we're at now.
It's what we're stuck with.
Let's flip on through the. There's an ad for Marvel Masterworks. And then an interesting one for the West Coast Avengers, 42-46, a five-part epic by John Byrne, Vision Quest, beginning in November. So you can tell if we pick those up, you can see when like John Byrne actually cares about things.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that, you know, anyone would care more, like he cares about the West Coast Avengers more than Starbrand. I mean,
I think that 45, which has like the vision in front, like became a key issue. Like maybe like that's like a version of the vision that kind of sort of showed up in one of those Marvel TV shows.
okay. This is, if as I recall it, it's a bit of again revisioning from Byrne that like, oh, this he didn't like how Vision had developed for a while or something, so he kind of pushes a reset button on it and leaves Wanda, like you know, with her kids disappearing or something like that. So I
Yeah.
think it does echo into the
you
current
know,
MCU stuff, but.
do you know who the character is that's the blonde on 43?
Oh, Mockingbird.
Mockingbird, all right. Because like you got her and Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye, and they all have the pointy mask. It's like it's a little much.
I mean, honestly, they're a good team. You got Tigra, Wonder Man, you know, fine. But and then something about the Human Torch at the end there. I forget who, it's like an old android or something also.
Okay.
So yeah, this is like, you know, one of those kind of my golden age, you know, dream of how this story ended. I'm gonna unwrite whatever Roy Thomas did and write this in instead. Okay, man.
You mean creator of Wolverine, Roy Thomas? Lot of people are sassing him about movie credits these days.
Everyone's like, you know, got to argue things 50 years after the fact now. I don't know. On sale this month. I think we've covered everything this month.
We have
Another ad
indeed.
for the couple of graphic novels at the end that we mentioned last time.
Yep.
Any other thoughts on these stories we had tonight?
Da, da, da. It's over. At least we don't have to do another Star Brand for a little while.
Oh man, it is you know, even nice shots of Pittsburgh don't pay off or don't make up for this kind of disjointed, centerless pseudo storytelling. I don't know. It's
Yeah.
frustrating. As we said before, a guy with a lot of talent could do fun things with this title, but
Right.
unless he really didn't want to. Yeah, so I hadn't really thought about it before, but like trying to create paradise on Earth and trying to make an end to death are very religious, questions that he's been posing in these last couple of issues. Sort of slipped it by my radar, which is usually good for that sort of thing. But in fact, yeah, thinking about last issue, it seemed to be pointing out how ridiculous it would be if there was no death, which is kind of one of the things that we're promised in the Bible at, some point. So I'm not quite sure if he's trying to argue with that or just, spin a rather poor story out of it. But, well, not everything is meant to be approached in this way. So.
Yeah. Could have worked in like Morrison's Animal Man or something, but doesn't work here.
It's let's see, we mentioned that the prices have gone up slightly and possibly the sales have gone down slightly, but
How much did you pay for yours that had the price sticker on it?
$5.
$5. Dang.
Well, yeah, that's
My
would have been
favorite thing
happier if it
ever
was a
was
good
like
issue.
the price guide or like book guide to forgotten universes has a price guide in it, and like every single new universe comic is listed at $3. There's no variation.
We have to work on our own price guide. Well, as it's a full 100th episode celebration winds down here, next time we will continue with our regular rotation when the new universe checks in on the Teen Runaways of Psi-Force 28.
Psi-Force 28. Kathy Ling is on her own, and her telekinetic powers are pushed to the limit when she faces the Russian paranormal. Calling in your help on this one.
Shivotnaya.
Yeah, number. Will Kathy be up to the test, or will she break? She's not going to break. Written by Fabian Nicieza, penciled by Eric Larson. What? Inked by Chris Ivey. 32 pages. Mando offset paper. Direct sales only. $1.50.
Not holding my breath for Eric Larson, but okay. We
Yeah.
can, in the meantime, you can always find us at our website, kickersinc.com. You can also email us at newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe for 100 episodes, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
Eric Larson's going to be coming for you after that comment. It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
Oh, I want a full record of this for the science boys.
Pittsburgh is reborn.